This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 355. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Wahaha meets Future Gloom, Ambush Bug goes on a multiverse tour, Oliver and Dinah kind of reunited, a gorilla cover always sells, and the Headless Snow Woman. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, May 17th, 2015. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Convergence, Justice League International number 2 by Mars and Manley. So we have the Bwahaha JLI versus the Kingdom Come Justice League. So the result is really not in question here.
Yeah.
But let's see how they get there. Ted Kord leads the JLI and tries to broker a peace, which is a common theme in these Convergence titles. Let's team up and stop Telos. Of course, the danger is Telos may destroy your home city for doing so. Ted talks to the Kingdom Come Diana, who looks like the standard Diana with slightly grayer hair. Where's the armor from the cover?
Yeah, well. It's just,
it was like, I had to keep, oh yeah, that's right. This is the Kingdom Come Diana.
Yeah.
You've got armor, use it. So Diana only agrees to move the battle outside of town. And then the battle is on. The JLI and Kingdom Come Blue Beetles meet and decide to team up. And they quip as they fight Telos' drones. Unfortunately, by the time they return, the main battle is over, and Kingdom Come won. No serious injuries. That was the whole point is, okay, we can defeat them, but we don't have to hurt them.
Yeah.
So they just part ways. At least someone remembered Beetle's birthday, and it turns out that Booster dropped by to set up a prank on him. How this fits in with what's going on in the Booster Gold version...
You know, this just doesn't make any sense to me. So you lose the battle. Your city is supposed to be destroyed, but nothing. They go back to the city and nothing has happened, and Booster Gold's been there.
Right. Well, again, they have to do this the way they've designed this because they don't want to give spoilers for the final issue of Convergence.
Well, I think it's just dumb.
It's a poor construction of an overall story, no question.
It is, yes. And then I also thought that the Booster thing was cool, but... How can this booster be the same as Ted's booster?
Right.
If it's a different city in a different world.
Yeah. As usual, the editors are out to lunch. Convergence Supergirl Matrix number 2 by Giffen and Green II. So Giffen said, well, I know this is a bad overall story, so I'm just going to write a really goofy story. And Easter eggs abounding in this issue. So Matrix and Ambush Bug... which is this bizarre character created in the 80s to basically make fun of DC Comics.
But you love Ambush Bug.
I love
every time he shows up, yes. You just rave and rave and rave.
So they're having a coffee at Sun Dollar, of course, because that's DC's Starbucks.
Yes.
Bug says she smells like spackle, which is a reference to her protoplasm state, because this is the Matrix version of Supergirl, who's actually just this blob of protoplasm
that
can make herself look like Supergirl.
Yeah, and that joke just runs through the whole thing.
Yeah. We get a parody humiliating romance cover, which is kind of like a early 70s DC cover, very much in that style. And then Lady Quark returns, who's, of course, the one that Supergirl's supposed to be fighting. May just... telekinetically throws her away again, as she did in the previous issue, because she's got telekinetic powers. Meanwhile, Bug made it to a post-Great Disaster bar. He can teleport, so he's literally teleporting among the cities of Telos.
And that it took me a while, but that's actually why Supergirl is following him around, because he's got that teleport thing right. that Lex wants.
Yeah. So he's arguing with a giant rat. Lady Quark returns. Bug, breaking the fourth wall, shows her the script, is like, you're supposed to be at this point here.
And that really threw me back into multiversity. And yeah. it's like, wait, no, you should be over in multiversity showing her the comic book, not here.
Why is an ambush Bug somewhere in multiversity?
Yeah.
So May and Quark chase him through worlds as he's teleporting. He teleports to Earth, not Marvel. I think it's Earth 8. And he has a chat with Louseman, not to be confused with Spider-Man. He then teleports to 31st century Metropolis and tries out for the Legion of Superheroes. Then off to Future's End and the Cyborgs. Then to Earth Comedy. I don't remember the number, but it's basically where all of the DC's comedy titles went. With Officer Casey, there's a reference to Bob and Jerry who have made into zombies. That's clearly a reference to The Adventures of Bob Hope and The Adventures of Jerry Lewis, oh. which were DC titles in the 60s, mind you. Only Casey, Binky is DC's Archie, and those two little kids are left who are clearly Sugar and Spike. Then finally, back to May's city, who's had enough of Luthor and then takes him out off screen. She comes back like stained with blood, so basically she just killed him. Then Quark and May duke it out while Erwin sneaks away. So I just love this story because Giffen's just said, this is a stupid idea, this overall story, so I'm just going to write a stupid story. Don't worry about setting it in continuity.
Yeah. I know you like this kind of thing. I just, it's not that I'm annoyed with it any more than I'm annoyed with any of the other number twos in the series.
Convergence Green Arrow number 2 by Marks and Morales. So it's the 90s version of Oliver and Connor versus the Kingdom Come Dinah and Olivia, who is Oliver and Dinah's daughter, who is now Black Canary in Kingdom Come.
So that brings up a question for me.
Yes.
I guess I had pictured this more or less as a, this city fights this city and whoever wins has to go on and fight another city.
Yeah.
Like until
a,
you know,
like a tournament.
Yes. But if Casey Dinah is here and Casey Wonder Woman is in another comic, are they two different KC cities?
Yeah,
or?
Exactly. This really doesn't make any sense in terms of there's several different titles that have references to Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
Because Kingdom Come is so cool, all the writers wanted to use it.
Apparently.
The Kingdom Come team is introduced in their city, and we get to see Kingdom Come Bruce and Oliver. And of course, Bruce, in that continuity, his back is broken. He has this armature that basically keeps him upright. And Oliver is just this cantankerous old guy.
Mm-hmm.
Then the combatants are transported out, and they then spend a lot of time figuring out all the relationships going on here. It's like, well, oh, she's going to be our daughter? Well, not really, because that yeah. Kingdom Come continuity doesn't really count for you.
Now, that was a great little bit there where they're all trying to figure out, and Connor's like, oh, you're my sister. Yeah. Oh, no, you're my half-sister. Oh, you know.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of great dialogue here. And then the Kingdom Come Dinah realizes they aren't supposed to team up. They're supposed to fight.
Yes.
We learn they're on a floating city that Telos whipped up, like an extra bonus city.
Which really, really, really reminded me of when in Age of Ultron, yeah. the city floated out of the ground. But
exactly.
Oh, spoiler.
Spoiler. At first, they refuse, but then Telos reminds them of the consequences. Dinah starts the canary cry, but Oliver shoots a gas arrow, which she's starting to cough, and she can't breathe through it. Oliver and Connor are on the run, and they're having a heart-to-heart while they're on the run. Dinah traps them with a hologram, which is projected by Olivia's bionic eye. And then Olivia uses her canary cry, which instead of being sonic, it just paralyzes who you're firing it at. So the boys are paralyzed, and then Dinah just tranquilizes them. So Casey's the victor again. And as you said, okay, if Casey's a victor in one battle but not in another, how does that count?
Yes. So what I was thinking with this Olivia's canary cry,
yeah,
and her bionic thing, it sort of reminded me of Dinah's thing in the new Arrow on the Arrow gave her on mm-hmm. the TV show mm-hmm. that amplifies her cry so she has the
right.
canary cry.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that just, you know, kind of reminded me of that.
I think so. Astro City number 23 from Vertigo by Busiek and Anderson.
Yay! Not a convergence title!
So, this is a tale of another civilian, which is what this title does the best of. The idea that there's these civilians in a world of superheroes and how do they handle themselves. He's a newcomer to Astro City trying to get a drumming gig. And, oh, by the way, he's a talking gorilla.
Yes.
An audition is broken up when aliens crash, forcing Styx, the character, to save kids in a burning apartment. The media swarms over him and he swings away. Some hipsters ask if he has somewhere to crash. Well, he did do an Airbnb, but this would be free and he kind of needs the money.
Mm-hmm.
Once he crashes, he gives them his backstory. He's from a hidden jungle gorilla city in Antarctica who are always training to defend themselves.
Because apparently the city is on a rift of some kind with
other dimensions
and villains keep coming through.
So members of the First Family, prior to the accident that turns them officially into the First Family, mm-hmm. aka Fantastic Four, discover it just in time in order to arm them with modern weapons. So the city thanks them for helping them basically survive, but decides to keep the outside world out anyways, but it slips in, which is how he learned how to play the drums.
Yes, the gorilla listens to pirate radio, yeah. apparently.
They end up forming a band, and then a group of super teens, Reflex Six, Teen Titans, asks if he wants to join them, but he refuses because he just wants to play drums. Evil scavengers break into one of their gigs and plan to take him for sale to other bad guys.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
Styx has been trained well, however, and takes them out. So he's not sure if he can really follow his dreams in Astro City or not, but then remembers the other job offer in this Teen Titans-esque group. It's a very cute story. You could actually remove the gorilla angle and it would still work. At an Astro City story, but that's a lovely addition to it.
Oh, it was great. This is now officially my favorite comic gorilla.
And
I love this guy.
And as we've talked about before, gorilla covers always sell.
Yes.
This is a trope in the comic book industry.
You should see a big bump in the sales of Astro City
Absolutely.
With this. I thought it was kind of interesting. I was reading the letter column. I don't know if you read the letter columns.
I kind of scan it sometimes.
Yeah. And apparently a lot of people have been pushing for a gorilla story for quite a long time. So there you go.
There you are. Fables, The Wolf Among Us, number 5 from Vertigo by Justice, Sturgis, Sadowski, McManus, and more. This is a digital first series. It's based on a video game.
Is this a limited series?
I don't know. It's unclear whether it's... I have to assume it's limited, but I don't think they've ever stated that.
I just didn't know if maybe they'd wanted to keep going after the regular Fables, because, you know, I would think that they make some money on Fables.
I would guess they want to let this go as long as they can. So when we last left Bigby, he was staring at the beheaded Snow White. He's been taken in for questioning by the Mundy police. Mayor Crane, Ichabod Crane, breaks him out and then makes them all forget that he was even there and the events of the last 24 hours so that Bigby can go actually work the case. We learn of the relationship between Bigby and Ichabod Crane. Snow tracked down Big Bad Wolf in the 1600s using a hexed knife to let him become human, which I'm guessing is probably referenced in that hardcover. Maybe. I don't know. Then took him from the Carpathians to America, specifically Salem, again, 1600s, and put him in Crane's care to humanize him. And we learn Crane was quite the scoundrel with young women, or were they witches?
Yeah. So here was my issue with this part of the story.
Yeah.
Ichabod Crane is a character from a book that would have been written after Salem.
Yeah.
And so how could he exist as a fable in a time before that?
Well, because wasn't it written in that time period?
No.
Oh, you're right. It's more like the 1700s.
Yeah.
That's a good question. How does a character exist before he was written?
Yes.
So in the main story, Bigby stops Bluebeard from torturing Dweedledee, and then interrogates Tweedledee, tells him he's going to arrest Tweedledum for the murders because he looks good for it. Bluebeard and Bigby come to blows over interrogation methods, and then Snow walks in. Turns out someone else was using a glamour to make them look like Snow, and that's who was killed. Bigby and Snow have a spat about her protection, the fact she needs protection. She says, I don't need you to protect me. We get a cut back to Salem, where Crane teaches Wolf about deception. Then back to the main story, where Toad's son is questioned and provides some valuable info. Snow and Bigby go to view the faux Snow's body. And that's where that ends. I really do need to read that Wolf novel. I know we have it around here somewhere. I just haven't gotten to it.
I haven't either. I'm surprised. I'm going to look for it. Maybe because we have it in paper form.
Yeah.
And I haven't really read a paper book for a while.
And now, the triumphant return of America's favorite new game show.
Ah, guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? We haven't played that for a long time.
We have not.
Do you remember how to play, Mark?
I think so.
Need a quick recap of the rules? Okay, I'm going to turn on the timer, and you have 2 minutes to guess who's on the cover of this week's Entertainment Weekly. Are you ready?
I'm ready. TV related?
No, not really.
Okay, is it one genre on the cover? Is it some sort of list cover?
No.
Is it some sort of preview cover?
No.
Some sort of review cover?
No.
So
it's one person.
It's one person, but they're known for more than just one genre.
Yes.
Okay. Are they known for TV?
Yes.
Are they known for movies?
Yes.
Are they known for music?
No.
Okay. So are they mostly known for movies today?
I would say probably yes.
Okay. And are they over 40?
Yes.
A man?
No.
A woman?
Yes.
And let's see. So somebody who moved from TV to movies or goes back and forth?
Yes.
So back and forth?
Yes.
Okay. Huh. Known for any particular genre?
Well, in the broadest sense of genre, yes.
Okay. Known more for comedy?
Yes.
Okay. And is now primarily known for movies, though?
Well, I would say so, although maybe among a certain group it would be TV.
Certain group it would be TV. Blonde?
Not right now.
Oh, shoot. I hate that answer.
All those women who change their hair color.
I know, they change their hair color all the time. Comedy.
Broad comedy.
Broad comedy. Melissa McCarthy?
Yes. I gave you too many
hints.
Yeah,
when you say broad comedy, it's like, okay.
Yeah, she has a new movie coming out called Spy.
Oh, yeah, and she does jump and back and forth.
Yes, and she has a TV show, so she has both movies and TV shows at the present time.
You're right. Okay, wanted to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9 SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.